Sean's gut knotted with shock, and for long moments he was stunned by the enormity and cunning of the trap that China had prepared for him. The cruelty of it was diabolical. To allow them to believe that they were being set free, letting them taste the relief of crossing out of harm, when in fact they were going to a fate even worse than China himself could have meted out to them. The fury of the Zimbabwe High Command would know no bounds. Sean was the holder of a Zimbabwe passport, a document of convenience, but one which would make him a traitor and a murderer beyond any help from outside. He would be handed over to the notorious Zimbabwe Central Intelligence Organization and taken to the interrogation cells at Chikarubi Prison, and he would never re-emerge from there alive. Job, despite his wounds, would share the same fate. Even though Claudia was an American citizen, officially, she no longer existed. It was weeks since she had been reported missing. By this time, interest in her case, even at the United States embassies in Harare and Pretoria, would have cooled. Along with her father, she was presumed dead, and so she could expect no protection. She was as vulnerable as they were. The trap was completely closed. There was no way out. The Renamo army behind them, Frelimo on either hand, and the Zimbabwean CIO ahead of them. They were marooned in a devastated wasteland, doomed to be hunted down like wild animals or to slow starvation in the wilderness. "Think," Sean told himself. "Find the way out." They could attempt to cross the Zimbabwe border at some other point than the Honda Valley, but the CIO would have the entire country alerted for them. There were permanent army blocks on every road. Without papers, they wouldn't get more than a few miles. And then there was Job. What would they do with Job? How could they transport a wounded man when every police and military post would be looking for somebody in a stretcher? "We must go southwards," Alfonso said. "We must go to South Africa." "We?" Sean stared at him. "You want to come with us?" "I can't go back to General China," he pointed out philosophically. "Not after I have betrayed him. I will come with you to South Africa." "That's a trek of 300 miles through two opposed armies, Frelimo and the southern division of Renamo. And what about Job?" "We will carry him," Alfonso replied. 300 miles? "Then we will leave him behind," Alfonso shrugged. "He's only Matabele and he's dying anyway. It will be no great loss." Sean caught the angry words that rose to his tongue and remained silent while he thought it out. Every way he twisted it and examined it, he saw that Alfonso was right. To the north, the dubious haven of Malawi was blocked by the waters of Kaborabasa and by the General China's division. To the east lay the Indian Ocean, and to the west, the Zimbabwean CIO. "All right," Sean admitted reluctantly. "South is the only way. Perhaps we can squeeze through between Frelimo and the southern division of Renamo. All we have to do is get across a heavily guarded railway line and the Limpopo River and find enough to eat while we're doing it in a land that has been burned and devastated by 10 years of civil war. In South Africa, we will eat meat every day," Alfonso pointed out cheerfully. Sean stood up. "Will your men follow you?" "I will kill those that don't," Alfonso was matter of fact. "We can't let them go back to General China." "Right," Sean agreed. "And you will report on the radio schedule that I've crossed into Zimbabwe. We'll be able to string China along on the radio for 4 or 5 days. He won't realize that we've broken away southwards until we are well on our way and beyond his range. You'd better talk to your men now. We'll have to turn south right away. Talk to them before they realize for themselves that we're up to something." Alfonso called in the sentries, and in the grey light of dawn, the faces of the Shanganis were sober and intent as they squatted in a circle around him and listened to Alfonso describe to them the southern paradise to which he would lead them. "We are all weary of fighting, of living like animals in the bush. It is time we learn to live like men, to find good wives, to bear our sons. He was filled with the fiery eloquence of the recent convert. And before he had finished, Sean saw the sparkle of anticipation in most of their eyes, and he felt a lift of relief. For the first time, he began to believe that the journey ahead might just be possible, with a great deal of endeavour and an even greater deal of luck. He went to tell Claudia and Job what lay ahead. Claudia was bathing Job's face with a damp rag. "He's much better. A good night's rest." Then she broke off as she saw his face. Claudia's spirits visibly plummeted as he explained to them what they had to do. "It was too good to be true," she whispered. "I knew deep down that it wouldn't be that easy, that General China wasn't Santa Claus in disguise." Job lay so still on his stretcher that Sean thought he had once again slipped over the edge of consciousness, and he reached out to check his pulse. At his touch, Job opened his eyes.
"Can you trust those Shanganis?" he whispered.
"We don't have much choice," Sean pointed out, and then went on briskly. "We leave me here." Job's whisper was barely audible, but Sean's expression hardened and his voice was brittle with anger. "Cut out that sort of bullshit," he warned Job.
"Without me, you might have a chance," Job insisted, "if you have to drag this stretcher."
"We've got 12 hefty Shanganis," Sean pointed out.
"Better some of you get through than all of us die. Leave me, Sean. Save Claudia and yourself."
"I'm getting angry," Sean stood up and said to Claudia. "We leave in 10 minutes. They travelled cautiously southwards all that day. It was an intense relief not to have to watch the sky for the hind gunships, although out of habit, the Shanganis occasionally turned their faces upwards. The closer they drew to the railway line, the slower their progress became, and they spent much of their time hiding in the dense wild ebony thickets and clumps of jesse, until Matatu came ghosting back to assure them that the coast was clear and to lead them onwards. In the afternoon, Sean left the main party hiding in a bushy ravine and went forward with Matatu. He was gone for almost 2 hours, and the sun was setting when he reappeared silently and suddenly at Claudia's side.
"You startled me," she gasped. "You're like a cat."
"The railway line is only a mile ahead. The Frelimo guard seem to be in a state of confusion still. There's a lot of military traffic on the line and a great deal of panicky activity all around. The crossing's going to be a trifle tricky. As soon as the moon comes up, I'll go up and take another look." While they waited for the moon, Alfonso rigged the radio aerial and made his scheduled contact with General China's headquarters. "The Dove is in flight." He gave the prearranged code so that China would believe that Sean and his party had crossed the border. After a brief pause, presumably while he relayed the message, the radio operator came back to Alfonso with the order to return to the main base on the river. Alfonso acknowledged and signed off.
"They won't expect me to arrive back for another 2 days," Alfonso grinned as he packed up the radio. "It will be that long before they start getting suspicious."
As the moon pushed its bald silver pate above the trees, Sean and Matatu slipped away into the forest to make a final reconnaissance of the railway line. A mile south of their position, they found the place where the line crossed a narrow stream. Although the stream contained only a few shallow puddles, the banks were thick with riverine bush, which would afford them good cover. Originally, the bush must have been cleared for 100 yards on each side of the line, but secondary growth had been allowed to spring up to waist height.
"Sloppy Frelimo bastards," Sean muttered. "That will give us some good cover, and we'll stay in the riverbed."
The main line crossed the stream over an embankment and culvert. There was a guard post on the approaches, 50 yards up track from the culvert. While Sean watched through his binoculars, a Frelimo sentry with his AK rifle slung on his back sauntered down to the bridge over the culvert. He leaned on the guardrail and lit a cigarette. The glow of the cigarette marked his progress as he ambled back to the guard post. He seemed to Sean to be a little unsteady on his feet, and when he reached the guard post, A faint ripple of feminine giggles carried to where Sean and Matatu lay.
"They're having a party," Sean chuckled.
"Palm wine and jig-jig,"
Matatu agreed enviously. And in the moonlight, held up his right hand with his thumb trapped between his first two fingers.
"I would like some of that myself."
"You randy little bugger,"
Sean tweaked his ear. "When we get to Johannesburg, I'll stand you the biggest, fattest lady we can flush out." Matatu's taste in amour ran to the mountainous. "Like Sherpa tensing on Everest," Sean often remarked. The distractions with which the railway guards had provided themselves promised to make their crossing easier. Sean and Matatu withdrew quietly and started back to where they had left the rest of the party. They'd been gone for 3 hours, and it was a few minutes before midnight as they approached the camp. At the head of the ravine, Sean paused to give the recognition signal, the liquid warble of a fiery-necked nightjar. He didn't want to be shot by one of Alfonso Shangani's. He waited a full minute for the reply, and when it did not come, he repeated the signal. Still there was silence, and he felt the first trickle of alarm. Instead of going straight in, they circled the ravine cautiously, and in the moonlight Matatu picked up unexpected spoor and squatted over it, frowning with alarm. Sean whispered, "Who? Which way?"
"Many men. Our own Shanganis."
Matatu lifted his head and pointed to the north.
"They are going out, leaving camp."
"Outgoing?" Sean was puzzled. "Doesn't make sense. Unless..." Oh, God, no. Swiftly, quietly, he closed in on the camp. The sentries he had set before he left were gone, their posts deserted. Sean felt panic rise in a wave that threatened to suffocate him. "Claudia," he whispered, suppressing the urge to shout her name aloud. He wanted to rush into the camp and find her, but he drew a series of deep breaths and fought back the panic. He slipped the AKM onto fully automatic and went down on his belly, creeping in. The five Shanganis he had left asleep in the gutter of the ravine were gone. All their equipment and their weapons had disappeared. He went on and made out the shape of Job's stretcher in the dappled moonlight. Beside it, exactly as he had left her, Claudia's body wrapped in a blanket, but just beyond her another body lay sprawled. In the moonlight he saw the sheen of wetness on the back of the man's head. Blood. Sean threw all caution aside and rushed to Claudia's body, dropping to his knees beside her and sweeping her into his arms. She gasped and cried out, coming out of deep sleep, beginning to struggle in his arms, and then quietening, she realized who he was.
"Sean?"
she blurted, still groggy with sleep.
What is it? What happened?"
"Thank God," he murmured fervently. "I thought..." He set her down gently and reached across to where Job lay in the litter. "Job, are you all right?" He shook him carefully, and Job stirred and murmured. Sean jumped to his feet and went to where Alfonso lay. He touched his neck. The skin was warm, his pulse strong and even. "Claudia," he called, "bring the flashlight." In the beam of the flashlight, he examined the laceration in Alfonso's scalp.
"A nice little ding," he grunted.
Although the bleeding had staunched spontaneously, he pressed a field dressing over it and bound it in place. "Good thing they hit him on the head, or they might have done some serious damage." He grinned wryly at his own joke.
What happened, Sean?" Claudia demanded anxiously. "I was fast asleep. I didn't hear a thing."
"Lucky for you." Sean tied the tag ends of the bandage. "Or you might have got the same treatment."
"What happened? Where are the others?"
"Gone," he told her. "Flown, deserted. They obviously didn't fancy the walk or the destination. They bashed Alfonso on the noggin and took off back to General China."
She stared at him.
"You mean there are only the four of us now? All the Shanganis except Alfonso have gone?"
"That's right," Sean agreed.
And Alfonso groaned and reached up to touch his bandaged head. Sean helped him sit up.
"Sean,
Claudia tugged at his arm, and he turned back to her.
What are we going to do?
Sean glanced across at Job's stretcher.
What are we going to do with Job? How are we going to carry him? How are we going to get out of here now?
That, my love, is an extremely interesting question, Sean agreed grimly. All I can tell you is that by this time tomorrow, our old pal General China is going to know that we are on the run and he's going to know exactly where we are headed.
She stared at him aghast.
What are we going to do?